Okay, we're back on the mic. It's been a crazy week, as most weeks have been in 2020, I would say. We were particularly busy because we had that long show with Scott Fisk, and I think it went pretty well. We learned a lot from it, in many different ways, informationally, and also just how we're going to go about trying to do this, listening, things like that. I wanted to touch on a few things that as I listened back on the episode, the different parts of the episode, I wanted to just touch on a few things. Before Tom gets here, we're about to start episode 5. Episode 1, I didn't really have much to say. It was more about COVID, which just to take a small step back here, I feel that this podcast, the John and Tom Show, we didn't really have we were sort of inspired because of our similar views on the, you know, how the just kind of Trumpism, where the world is, where America is right now. But doesn't mean that that has to be the only topic that we talk about. And even with people on the other side, I hate saying the other side, but even with people who have different views, we just like to talk about important issues of the day with different people, just get slightly different perspectives. COVID was one of them. Scott, you know, being an anesthesiologist, he had some interesting perspectives, especially in Kentucky. It's always interesting to hear different states, how different states are handling it and the experience that's going on there, and the perspective of a Trump supporter, like, you know, since they have a Democratic governor, how did you feel it went? And he sounded like they were handling it pretty well, maybe a little overdoing it, but I think their numbers are decent compared to some of the other places. Regardless, that was an interesting aspect of the part one. I also enjoyed talking to him about, you know, I don't know, I guess the just wanted him to kind of agree with me on the fact that I think this is well known, but a lot of people would deny it, that Trump's response, the initial response, and pretty much the entire still to this day response, is that COVID is not something to take seriously. May or may not need to wear a mask. Nothing to worry about. He said it all the way through just recently. I mean, even, you know, he went and got COVID and then got some mystery cocktail and came out, you know, healthy. And nobody knows what he got. And so it's just a big mystery. But he agreed basically that, you know, there were more people died. We could say more people died because of his response. We can't say all people, we can't say a lot of, you know, percentages or anything like that. But he agreed. And I think it is important to acknowledge that his response, the leader of the country's response, is very important in the situation. Just to reiterate that, hard to imagine that people wouldn't agree with that, but I guess there are some people that still think that, you know, they still think it's a hoax. I mean, there's still people to this day are saying it's a fake, phony pandemic. Speaking for Trump at these rallies, they're calling it a phony pandemic. I just don't think they understand what's going on. Anyway, part two, we moved into the election. One of the points that Scott had mentioned was, I was asking him, do you think it's a fair election and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, right now Trump and his supporters they're not accepting the fact that they lost. And his thing was, well, back in 2016, nobody accepted the fact that Trump won. They never gave him a chance. I think there's a multiple part answer to that. Number one, the 2016, the Republicans had the presidency, the Senate, and the House. And I don't know, you know, they had complete control of the government. And I don't believe they did very much during that time. What I do know is that he was complaining about being attacked. Or not even attacked. I don't think it was an attack. He was complaining about unfair questioning from reporters and things like that. Like just basic things that, you know, reiterating things that he had said. You know, everybody always has to say, oh, he meant this, he meant that. But, you know, verbatim, these are things that you said. Can you explain that? And then he gets mad at the reporter, tells them they suck, and I'm a victim, I'm a victim. And then, you know, it exacerbates the whole issue of, you know, fake news and fake news. How many times did that guy say fake news? So I don't really think it's fake news at all. It's not fake news. It's, you know, most, I believe the majority of reporters and news sources attempt to tell the truth. The problem is that they are focusing, including and or omitting certain things. That's the issue. You know, they may focus on only one part of the issue and focus on it and, really emphasize that and not even talk about the other side. And so it may not actually be a thing called fake news. It's not fake news. There's nothing fake about it. I mean, especially when you quote somebody directly and you ask them about that quote, that's not fake news. It's just trying to understand what you mean. And, but you know, yes. So I think what he meant to say was that, why are you focusing on everything that's negative that I say? Maybe that's what he meant. And that may be true. They did focus a lot on the negative, but you know, that's kind of that begs a reporter when somebody says something that's crazy or off the wall, you're going to want to know why they said that. You're going to want to ask that question because that's what people want to know. So anyway, I do think that Republicans had the opportunity to do whatever they wanted. They had total control of the government. I don't know why it matters what the media does at that point, because they could have done whatever they wanted. Who didn't accept him? I mean, he, in 2018, yes, the Democrats won the House, and then they started trying to go to the, you know, and then they saw the thing that happened with Ukraine. There was a lot of other issues that they could have done, but they felt this one was the strongest. And yes, they were out to get him. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not totally sure what the motivation was for the House Democrats. I don't like the guy, and I don't, I think there were a lot of things that he was doing that were borderline emoluments clause. I think he didn't release his taxes, that potential tax evasion. Who knows who he's in bed with? Does seem like, you know, he's supporting these dictators all over the world. Very anti-un-American things, but he's just kind of like a mafia boss, always stays one step ahead. He never directly gave orders to anybody. He always just a wink or a smile. He's very good at eluding capture. But the Democrats were definitely out to get him, I'd say. So I do agree with that. 2018, they, you know, went after him, impeachment. It did seem like there were things that were real. There's not a hoax. It wasn't a hoax. You do kind of wonder about Trump's relationships with the Russians and Putin, because, you know, there is some evidence out there of some strange things that he may, you know, owe them some favors. And, you know, he's never ever said a bad thing about Putin, and he's chosen Putin over our intelligence community multiple times. The Russians just were found to have hacked, the worst hack in history, our government networks, and he won't say a bad word about it. His Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, said it was the Russians. Everybody else, all the experts are saying it's the Russians. It's definitely the Russians. They've had access to our, you know, 18,000 companies in the United States, and 425 of the Fortune 500 companies, full access, gotten through the back door. Not sure how or why or how they did that. You had to have high level clearance to do that, but they've had that access since March of this year, March 2020. And you know, in order to get out of that situation, we may have to do a whole new infrastructure. it's disconcerting, and it should be an obvious, the only person that seems to not think it was a big deal is the president, which once then he makes that statement, then the rest of his followers believe it, because whatever he says, they believe. And so there's that. Pretty scary stuff. The hack. We don't really know where that's going to go. But anyway, back to part two. This whole thing came out because Scott said he wasn't given a fair chance. And I think he was. I think that a lot of people didn't like him. There's always going to be, whenever a president comes into power, there's always going to be people that don't like him. And it's just ever since there was a president, that's been the case. This president claimed victimhood more than any other president in history, which exacerbated the issue, I believe. I do believe that also there were a lot of people out to get him. It's true, but there's always people out to get him. There was a lot of people out to get Obama, you know. But Obama handled it totally different. He just didn't listen to it, moved on. He who's bigger than that, you know. He didn't let that noise get to him. I guess people saw that as a shady way of dealing with it. I think it's just a professional way of dealing with it. It's a grown up way of dealing with it. Trump's way of dealing with it was to have a tantrum and call people names, make up people names, and tell them they're the worst reporter ever, and they've been, you know, 30 years on the job, like top reporter in the world, you know, like total disrespect, total just fifth grader stuff, you know, calling people names. So yeah, and that would be considered a style issue. I think it matters. I do think it matters. I think style, behavior, acts, words do matter from a president, because that's a big part of their job is communication. So further, part two, I talked about a deficit graph, when there's Democrats in power and when there's Republicans in power. So the federal deficit under Reagan went from $70 billion to $175 billion. So pretty big increase. George H.W. Bush grew it to $300 billion. Clinton then ended his term with a $128 billion surplus. So Bush, G-Dub, took it from a zero, which is basically a surplus, to a $1.2 trillion deficit. Obama then came into power, and over two terms, he halved that into $600 billion. And he gets a lot of crap for having it, you know, ending his term with a $600 billion deficit, but he started with $1.2 trillion, so... and as of today, I believe as of December, Trump's deficit, here we go, $3.3 trillion. And yes, a little bit of that, part of that is probably from COVID, maybe half of it. Let's say half of it is from COVID. So, but he still made some major increases in the deficit. So that is just fact. There's no fake news. That's just his numbers. And that was what I had mentioned before. I hope that clears things up. Part three, I had said something about the China being like the United States. China being like the United States, it's just a perceived difference. I wanted to just retract that. That was a silly statement. I'm not sure where that came from. I think Scott had said it, and something went off in my head, like, "Oh yeah, maybe," but that's not accurate. It's silly. I did try to say I would. I definitely don't want to live in China or Russia. If you're listening in China or Russia, I'm sorry, but I, you know, being from America and, you know, used to this way of life, I prefer here. It's probably in your eyes, not too bad to live where you live, but I wouldn't want to live there. And then the last point of, yeah, so I already kind of mentioned the media issue. Kind of lumped it in with the other part, but yeah, that's kind of, I just wanted to clear up a few things that I had said or things that are left over. Episode 5 is coming up. If you can hold on, Tom's going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about socialism. Dun, 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 dun. and different types of socialism and how it compares to capitalism and the fact that communism is a type of socialism. It's not so, it is not the only type of socialism. It is a type of type of socialism. And, you know, talk about some of the differences between socialism, like democratic socialism, social democratic socialism, and communism. Those are two of the big ones. And then the fact that China is a different type of socialism too. So I think it's kind of important subject. I hope we can make some progress on it, because it seems like it's a major factor for a lot of politicians. It's a major talking point. A lot of accusations of all Democrats being socialists. A lot of accusations that if you vote Democrat, we're going to be communist China or communist Russia or communist Venezuela. And we have to talk about that, because that's misleading at the very least. So anyway, stick around for episode 5. Thanks.
Hey, John, how you doing today? All right, I take it.
All right. We were just chatting a bit about some more current events that just keep coming at us every 5 or 6 seconds. Tom showed me something that it's disturbing. The Army for Trump. Well, he has they're out there. Why don't you tell them about it a little bit? You read a little bit more than I did.
Well, I just had since I just looked at this since I got here. The Army of Trump is all, you know, all the disciples who are still trying to overturn the election, and they have these. See if I can find it here.
Yeah, there's. I saw the website. It had all these symbols on enlisting into the Army of Trump.
This is join the, this is from their website. It says join the Army for Trump, and it's and every one of these says enlist, and they've got these kind of fascist looking symbols for each category. Like, you can become a digital activist, or you can enlist to make calls on Trump talk or knock on doors. You can host a MAGA meeting, you know, Make America Great Again meeting, register voters. Well, I don't know. Okay. And you can, election day team, a Trump victory follow. I thought this one was really interesting. A Trump victory fellow.
What's that?
I see. Again, these are people, they're the whole, my gist, what I get from this. And like I said, you know, I want the listeners to understand, I just got privy to this, you know, in the last hour or so. But it looks to me like what it is, it's, there's still, these are people who are mustering and still making efforts to try to overturn the election. They're still convinced that Trump was robbed.
We've had some defectors recently and on the Republican side, right? Chris Christie.
Yes.
They're starting to peel off a little bit, but it's very, very late in the game, and they probably should have done that a long time ago, but I don't know. I mean, it's a little scary. We were going to have this show be mostly about socialism and versus communism, and how, you know, some of the, how people are unsure of the differences there, and also how people have portray it. Politicians will portray it as if you vote for a Democrat, you are voting for communism, or you're voting for, you know, China or Russia. It's the same. You're going to be, if Biden wins, we're going to be Venezuela on January 21st or something like that. That's how they're posing it. So we wanted to break that down and understand, like, truly, you know, what are they talking about? How off base is that, or, you know, just understanding it more. But given the recent events, I think we might pivot into a different topic for a while and see if we have time for the socialism discussion a little later. But I also want to talk a little bit about some of the right-wing groups to today. It kind of feels like it goes hand in hand a little bit with this Trump army idea.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's exactly. It's another offshoot of the ultra right Trump. I call them the disciples of Trump.
Yeah, well, disciples probably is right now is anyone that currently still is a diehard Trumper that feels that he won and the election was rigged and
right.
That, and I'd really like to know how many of those people exist right now. I bet it's more than we think.
You know, on the last podcast we did, I forget which part it was, but we were discussing, gee, how many Proud Boys are there? How many Antifa are there? You know, what numbers? I mean, I hope it's only maybe a few hundred or so.
Well, yeah, I did a little research over the weekend and into right wing. I haven't done the research in the left wing yet, just in the right wing. But the right wings seem to be anywhere from, I wish I'd have written that down, but I think it was between 20 and 60,000. So they're kind of unsure of the exact number, but we're talking 20, 60,000. So those are the people that are currently very, very aggressively, right-wing militia. And so if this Trump army situation is really, and this thing gets promoted and people start buying into it, you could be talking, they might arm these people, you talk hundreds of thousands into the millions, it scares the crap out of me. Because hysteria is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a hysteria right now. The message they keep saying, look, again, if you've bought into this Trumpism early on and you're still into Trumpism, you're not going to just decide that he's wrong all of a sudden. You're in it. Unless you're politically driven like Chris Christie, he's like, oh, you know what? I think they're going to lose. I'm going to switch sides. He's like, I'm surprised Lindsey Graham hasn't switched yet because he might switch two or three times.
That slime ball will probably be about the last.
But I guess my point is that it feels like that if you've been along this far, there's very little chance that you're going to give up on it now. You believe everything he says. And if they continue to push this, go look at the website. What's the website called? Is it just what's the actual website where that is?
It's
Trump Army.
It is TrumpsArmy.us.
TrumpsArmy.us. Check that out, and tell me if you don't think those symbols on that page are fascist. There's one that looks just like a Nazi symbol. It's very scary. And under each symbol, it says enlist. It doesn't say sign up. It doesn't. I mean, enlist is what you do in an army, and they know that, and they're trying to make it a militaristic vibe.
Well, he has again, this is my opinion, but he has aligned himself with, for example, the Proud Boys.
Yeah.
Well, part of their mantra is neo-fascism.
Yeah. Do you have that up? Do you have that list of things with some of their mantra? Because you read it off to me the other day.
Yeah.
White supremacy was one. Neo-fascism and chauvinism, right?
So chauvinism, that's right. So you got them all. Yeah.
Can't be a woman. Can't be a woman either. You can't be a woman in the Proud Boys. If you want to be a Proud Boy, you got to have those four things going for you. So there you go. But that's just the Proud Boys. There's over 50, as far as we know, other right-wing militia groups all over the country. I saw the Oath Keepers. I was talking the other day. They're a national organization. They're not a local.
Oh, wow.
Oath Keepers are national. So we could maybe pull that up and kind of go over that a little bit closer. But again, the fear, right now being, maxed out at 60,000 people, it's still a lot of armed, dangerous people.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of people, but they're spread out all over the country. It's not, they're not an Antifa. They're all these separate groups. If this Trump's army thing comes up, and they're funded by the president of the United States, they become one army.
Yeah.
And then they expand because all the people that are hysterically driven by this kind of guy who lives in this alternate reality, and they live in that reality too, they could sign up and decide that this is worth fighting and dying for. This is a very scary thing. I mean, you think about all the guys that got into the Nazi army. They probably weren't all like that at first.
No.
You know, they probably were just normal people. And then they just, this hysteria happened in this very charismatic leader. And this movement started happening. And all this hate and division, similar things that's happening right now. And then before they know it, they're an officer in this army that starts doing really horrible things.
Right.
It's the similarities are a little scary. I know you, whoever's listening is probably like, oh, come on, this is, you're talking crazy, but I don't know. I feel if you look at the early years of that, there are some similarities. And just look what's going on today. Just from this, the Trump's army is, I'm still trying to take it in that he showed me this. I can't believe there's an actual website out there and it's actually happening. It's I don't even know if it's a military coup. It's beyond it. It's like forming another, it's not even a coup because he's still president. And it's like, I don't know. It's very confusing to me.
You know, it's just like this whole business becomes more and more bizarre and unbelievable every day. We're talking about imposition of martial law. Now we have Trump's army. I'm thinking, gee, what's going to happen tomorrow? I looked at the events, I hope I got all of them. If I didn't, please contact us, let me know. But since our last podcast, and this occurred really on Friday, the 18th, Rudy and the gang asked the Supreme Court of the United States to overturn three Pennsylvania court rulings that upheld state election procedures and election results. Haven't heard the Supreme Court ruling on that yet, but something tells me they're going to be going to 1-60 from 1-59. John mentioned earlier, there are some Republicans now who are verbalizing their resistance to Trump's activities, one of them being Chris Christie, who was the former Republican governor of New Jersey. And he said basically in an interview with Wolf Blitzer, he warned Trump back as early as 2016, do not let Michael Flynn or people like Michael Flynn near the White House, and for God's sake, don't let him get into the Oval Office. Well, he's done that. Mitt Romney, the Republican senator from Utah, said it's embarrassing, it's sad and embarrassing that Trump is behaving like this, that he will not accept defeat. Finally, the media has acknowledged that this meeting took place in the White House on Friday, which, unfortunately, to think that the president would have people like that in the Oval Office to begin with, and that he would even entertain this notion of martial law is to me, that's way over the top. That's the most disturbing thing that's happened.
Right, right. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say Michael Flynn has been touting this since the election.
That I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, but nobody. So it was just him. So it didn't get. It really didn't get much press. But now that
I thought Michael Flynn was a reasonable guy back a while ago. You know, I never thought he was such a whack job. He was in jail, and then Trump pardoned him. And he seems to be a lot more active now that he's been pardoned, you know, and I'd said that before. I think there's a possibility that he's got a, you know, debt to pay now that he got his pardon. But, I don't know, maybe he was feeling that way all along but he did go to jail for Trump.
Well,
so he's a soldier.
You know, what really amazes me now, I personally contracted as a dentist with the Army for 10 years and I was in 3-4 different locations. I was here, I was in Kentucky, and I was in Colorado. And I spent a lot of time around the military, and I really developed quite a respect for members of the military, especially the career ones, because they seem like very honest, dedicated people who have the country's best interest in mind. And I cannot believe Michael Flynn must slip through the cracks, because he ascended to the rank of lieutenant general.
That is amazing.
Yeah,
you know, and there's always a couple bad seeds out there and some bad people mixed in, you know, that sort of get by somehow, but typically not that far in the military. It's very unusual.
Yeah, and here this guy turns out to be a convicted liar. He was convicted of lying to the FBI, for Christ's sake. Yeah. I mean, come on. And in fact, on kind of that same note, the Pentagon, there's people in the Pentagon that are fearing that Trump is going to try to impose martial law, but they're saying that ain't going to fly.
Well, I think you're right. That would be the ultimate. People ask about why would Trump go to jail? Why would Trump, you know, I think number one, tax evasion would probably be a good reason for him to go to jail after he's out. There's a lot in New York and some other places that, you know, but if this madness continues, I think they're, you know, hopefully he fails at his military coup, but if this madness continues and, you know, he's digging himself deeper into the hole, he's making bigger case for him to go to prison. Like, I don't think he necessarily has to go to prison right now. Based on what he's done, I think he'd just be, you know, just go away, you know, but it maybe some of the things come out that we find that he really did do some bad things, then fine. You go to trial, get a fair trial, and he goes to prison, whatever. But this thing, what he's doing right now, this not accepting the election results and starting this whole military or whatever you want to call it, Trump army, that is treason at the highest level. That is a reason to put him into prison. If this continues at this rate, if 50,000 crazy, sorry guys, not crazy. You're just militia. my bad. Take that back.
Distorted view.
Well, your view. Okay. It's your view. It's just 50,000 militia becomes a million and they start having a central leadership.
Yeah.
Called Trump Army, and it really becomes a thing. There's nothing I could think of worse in the United States that has happened internally other than the Civil War, which was long ago and totally different circumstances. Given where we're at now, in our current state of the world, it just, to have this happen is just unthinkable, really. And I don't know. I don't know exactly where I'm going with this, but I don't want to keep saying that Trump should go to prison. Obviously, he has to have some real evidence of wrongdoing, a fair trial, and then jury of his peers and everything and all that. Once he becomes a regular citizen, I want to make sure that I'm not saying that I believe that he should go to prison right now. But I think that with the processes and the evidence comes out, I could see it happening.
Yeah. You know, I would hope that if he would actually, and again, I don't put anything past him anymore. Yeah. I mean, at first I kind of thought, well, you know, he probably won't do this. No, hell, I think he's capable of anything at this point, but I would hope that if that fool tries to impose martial law, that the congressional, the legislative and judicial branches of government would remove him from office immediately.
What is it, the 25th Amendment?
25th Amendment, yeah. Yeah. If he's deemed unfit to in fact, the cabinet
do that. Who handles that?
I don't know. I think actually the cabinet has something to do, they can initiate it at least, say, hey, you know, this guy's out of it.
Who's in that?
Oh, God, you got Secretary of Transportation, Agriculture, I know, Education.
Like, they're all Trump people.
Yeah, they're all Trump.
So that's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, true. Yeah, but even the Republicans, I think if he did, well, My God, think about this. If he declared martial law and the Republicans decided to do nothing, you talk about handing yourself a death sentence. I think the
I've already felt that way so many times.
Yeah.
I've already felt that way so many times. Like, there's no way they can be support. They could support this. There's no way they can. No. And they continue to do it. It just seems like there is no end. There is no last straw, you know? And I just, I mean, I really, that's true. I really, that is how my brain has gone through this. I mean, I've been like, nah, the Republicans won't go with them on this one.
Yeah,
they won't
go
with them on this one.
Right.
Oh, 100% of them go with them.
Yeah.
Now we've got only about, what is it, like 60%, 70% that have signed that thing? Maybe 70%.
Oh, yes.
60 to 70%
yeah,
of them.
It's something like
there's
that.
Still
really
majority
sure.
of them signed on with him that the election was fraud. And so there's still a lot of them. There's still a lot of them. There has, but there finally has been some defection. There's been.
Yes.
Previously, the only defectors were like John McCain and Mitt Romney and then Jeff Flake and any Republican who is about to leave office leaving office or just left. They would be like, nah, he's the worst, you know. I can't believe he did this, but if you're still in office, still looking for re-election, they're all for Trump. But this issue just recently, there have been a few more, so that's a little bit encouraging, I guess. But it's still that, you know, I don't know. This you really threw me for a loop showing me that this morning.
Yeah, it just fell in my lap. Well, I was listening now. Tell you what I do, and John, I think, thinks I'm a little touched because I do this.
Oh, I know what he's going to say.
But this being, in fact, if you know me, you know I am touched. But this being the Republican Mecca, again, the Republican Mecca of the U.S., Indiana has an inordinate number of ultra-right radio talk shows. And one of them, probably the biggest one, comes out of WIBC with their 10,000 watts of broadcasting power right here in Indianapolis. And that's where I heard about the Trump army coming over here. In fact, they did a pitch for him. It sounded like a commercial. You know, join it, you know, enlist in the Trump army,
enlist.
You know, and then you can be one of the people to fight, to protect. I forget exactly how it went, folks, but from what I can remember, fight to protect the U.S., the president, and the Constitution.
Yeah.
Enlist in the Trump
something.
Army.
From
what?
Socialism. Which is what we're going to talk about today, but we a little off track. We still might.
Yeah, we might still have time.
Any other major events that we can that you have on your list there?
Okay, well, I kind of going back to the bizarre meeting, Oval Office meeting of Friday. If you recall, Sidney Powell, she's the female attorney that was originally part of the Rudy Giuliani gang, and she got so extreme and so fixated on conspiracy theories that they actually tossed her. But now she's back because she has been ultimately loyal to Trump. She tells him what he wants to hear. She says this was fraud and all that stuff. So his idea is to appoint her as a special counsel.
So she was too wacky for Trump.
Yeah.
So she was wackier than Trump, so they got rid of her. But now that they realize they can't, all their resources are exhausted, they're going to as far as wacky as you can get, and they're bringing her back.
Exactly.
Let's go full wacky.
That's exactly what they've done. Well, in fact, she is Michael Flynn's personal attorney. Now, that ought to tell you something. But anyway,
yes.
We won't even go there. But anyway, he intends to appoint her as a special counsel to investigate the election, whereby she would confiscate all the voting machines in the country, do a complete recount, and all this. And I don't know.
Doesn't that have to be somebody that is agreed to by the citizens or something? I don't think you can just appoint somebody to do that. It doesn't feel right.
Well, remember, he was going to lock up the governor and secretary of state of Georgia. So but again, see, that's just it. When I saw that, I thought the same thing. I thought, can he really do that? Can he, does there have to be some approval at the congressional level or whatever? And again, I'm not an attorney.
What is the motivation for everybody here? Is it just power? Have they lost their minds? What is it? What is the motivation for the average, like not the above average, but like the person who actually is starting to get a little power in this movement that they have? What is your motivation?
15 minutes of fame, maybe.
Is it fame? Is it power? Do you really believe this, like, you know, platform? What is the platform? The platform of America First, nationalism. America First and nationalism probably sums it up. There isn't, we're the only country in the world that matters, and we are, you know, going to isolate ourselves because we're self-sufficient. We don't need anybody else. And I don't care what anybody else thinks. That's kind of the general vibe, right? That's what they want to propagate. And that's sort of like, that's worth their fighting for, I guess. That mentality, mm-hmm. is that what it is? Because people are, doing some crazy things here, and they're putting their careers on the line, their lives on the line. For that, like, what is it they're fighting for so much? I think it is a hysteria. It's
like mob psychology. Yeah. But you know, it's just like, to me, it's like trying to understand the mind of a serial killer. Now, not that I'm saying they're serial killers, but my point is, not being an ultra radical by any means, I can't wrap my head around it. I don't know how you get to be that way. And like I said the other day, I think when you become a radical like that, you close your eyes and your ears and you only see and hear the things you want to see and hear. And what drives somebody to that mentality, I don't know. I wish I did. Maybe we need a psychologist to call in. Yeah, you know,
I would like to understand that more. Yeah, maybe a psychologist, or, you know, it's a type of brainwashing. It's a type of, you know, when you only listen to one news source or one side of the news source, you get brainwashed in a way, you know, on both sides. I mean, you can easily, you know, if you only listen to MSNBC all day long or CNN or something, then, you know, you can get easily brainwashed the other way. And Tom's good about listening to both sides. I recently started a Twitter account, the John and Tom Show is our account name. And I have just followed every single thing that comes up. follow. I don't care who it is. I want every possible, point of view to come my way. I want everybody. I want, you know, even the super extreme right and the super extreme left and anywhere in between. And, you know, I make a few comments here and there, but, nothing too inflammatory, nothing more than what I say on this podcast. But it's, you know, you get a lot of responses, and I forget what my point was, but we were talking about, it made me think of Twitter and, the one-sidedness of what you hear, the brainwashing. It's easy on Twitter. Twitter is another one of those that has algorithms that learns your behavior and tries to predict what you would like to see more. And that's the algorithms of these companies. They're very, very smart. They're AI. And they figure out, you've liked these things. You're definitely swinging in that direction. We're going to send you more of that stuff. We're going to send you more and more and more. So you click more. So you watch more. So you spend more time on your phone. So that's a money-driven thing. But it results in cutting your mind off from other opinions. And so that has been proliferating for the last 10 years. And we're starting to see a lot of people use Twitter. And if you go on Twitter, I mean, I can show you, you know, the amount of extreme comments, because it's anonymous, basically. There's no fear and retribution for the most part.
No.
You know, you can just say whatever you want. You can vent your worst demons. And then, you know, it's just Twitter. But it is... that's part of the reason why you're only getting one side of the story. So the point is, when I'm trying to get both sides. So Twitter doesn't know what to give me. you know, doesn't know what to send me. And, you know, it's sort of just all across the board. I think I might have broke it because it didn't allow me to do any more following. It's like, wait, you're breaking the rules. You can't follow that many different types of people.
Well, of course, you know, we've been tagged as a political podcast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's true. I mean, especially, you know, at least for right now, it is, because that's where all this craziness has happened. It's on a political level. So
I hope we can get past it.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't want to just be a political podcast. There's so many wonderful things in this world to talk about. And interesting things.
Oh, yeah.
Fun things. No. Doesn't always have to be politics. Unfortunately, right now, it's an incredibly scary time. I mean, I don't think people realize, like, the potential danger or just the intentions of this guy. The intentions of Trump and his people are really sinister. Really, really sinister. Trump's army, I mean, the election was rigged. And, you know, okay, I think we went through that on the Scott episode. I asked him about, we kind of dove into, okay, let's say, what does a rigged election look like? Or if this election was rigged, why haven't all of elections been rigged? I mean, he's saying, oh, the mail-in votes. And, well, the mail-in votes could have easily been swayed the other way, too. Like, we got into granular details about that, but, It appears from, you know, many, 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 many sources all across the country that this was the most secure election in our country's history. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of evidence of that. So for them to continue this, even at this rate, it shows you how serious they are. It shows you they're willing to go Scarface on everybody. Again, I'm going to use that reference like one more time.
Yeah, that's great.
But they're going to go, it's not just Al Pacino shooting everybody. It's, you know, maybe 100,000 militia guys going down shooting people. And this means so much to them. It's like, it's gotten to the point where it means more than anything. You know, it means... I was surprised to hear Scott said, I fear for my family's future. And I was like, do you mean like because of Biden or what? I don't think I ever got an answer to that. But I know, I think he said for the climate change and stuff like that. So I guess, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
He didn't really say it was because of Biden, but I wonder if there are other people, Trump supporters that think that because Biden was elected, that they fear for their country's future, for their children's futures. I have a 1 and a 3-year-old, and I have said that, you know, if Trump wins again, you know, another 4 years of this, I actually am a little scared for my kids' future, because it could get to the point, 4 more years of it, more and more sort of the continuation of what he's doing with, you know, crushing the media. Crushing opposing views. That's probably the biggest thing, is crushing opposing views and spreading this nationalist fervor. You know, his building a monarchy almost with his family. It's not just this nepotism that beyond anybody's wildest dreams, the amount of nepotism that's happened. And I don't know how anybody on Trump's side can say that nepotism is okay. Those people are not experts in those fields. They are relatives. They're children. They should not be, the speaking for American people. Okay. They have not been elected. Those people were not elected. Although he has the right to choose his cabinet or whatever, but wow. You know, I'm happy that Biden won, obviously, for extinguish a little bit of that flame.
Yeah.
Of that fervor. And that's at least we get, you know, 4 years of that. I don't know what's going to happen in another 4 years. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 years. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, there's so much angst and divisiveness out there. How it's going to all play out, I don't have a guess.
Yeah, you know, I for some reason I just thought of this. I really do think motive. You know, what is motivating Trump to do this? And I think it goes, and as I said before, and I'll say it again, I think it goes way beyond, oh, he's a sore loser. He can't handle being a one-termer. He can't handle defeat. No, I think what it is, it's just abject fear. He is scared to death of what's going to happen to him
so
when he can't hide behind the presidency anymore.
We've said this before, and I'm wondering if you have any proof or evidence of that. Because I've thought that about that too, and I do you know any like hard evidence of people that like he owes things to, or tax evasion or things like that? Do we have anything that we can offer? And you know, we can always follow up on this later, but I'm just curious.
Well, you know, no, I don't think so, because I don't think sure the Justice Department hasn't released any of that evidence.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and again, this is just, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but in my own personal research, I haven't been able to find out anything as far as hard evidence goes, right, from state of New York. And that's two places. And the other problem he's got, going back to the fear factor, Biden was asked, okay, when you get to be president, are you going to have the Justice Department go after Trump once he's out of office? And his reply was, I'm not going to stand in their way. I'm not going to encourage, just, you know, they can do their thing. If they have evidence and they want to go after him, they can go after him.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have private companies coming after him. You're going to have the U.S. government possibly coming after him, depending on how this all goes.
State of New York.
You got states. You got possibly other countries, such as Russia. But I don't know. I know people think that that's a hoax and everything, but I don't know. I can't speak to it. Nobody can. If I could, then I would. Like, if I had something, that I would submit it. But you know, there's nothing there, and you know, it. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard because he's really good at covering his tracks. And I think you just know that there's wrongdoing, but so the things that are more concrete that, you know, are, you know, you can't deny that, mm-hmm. that are, and I think that personally, I think my opinion more than, that he's afraid, of what's going to happen to him after office is, I think that he's just extremely into being the leader of the free world. I think he wants to do that. I think the power is intoxicating. And I don't think he ever expected to win in 2016. But then he slowly changed over the 4 years and got worse and worse and worse and more believing that he was the savior and believing that he was the rightful guy and nobody else. And almost like, maybe halfway through his term, he started feeling more dictatorial, you know, and authoritarian, you know, and realizing that, hey, I can fire whoever I want. I can surround myself with people that kiss my ass, and yeah, I don't need anybody to deny me. I can, and slowly but methodically, he has removed every single person that defies him, even a little bit. Anything publicly, they're gone. You know,
yeah, yeah.
And so like there is a track record here of and yeah, maybe it is maybe he is afraid of retribution after he's out. That's very possible. It's a theory. But I don't know. I see that his tendencies have just slowly led more and more to authoritarian. And it's intoxicating, probably, right?
Like, yeah.
And the power and all those people, yeah, they get to be like, wow, we're here. We're the leaders of the world. My family is running the world. Yeah. You know, let's keep it going. Why would I want to stop that? Who cares about the Constitution? Who cares about, you know, American values? You know, we got these people under our spell, you know, let's just keep going. And, but I guess what your point is that the desperation factor right now, like if I could see, maybe if you're intoxicated with power, you know, maybe you realize at some point you lost the election and that may not motivate you to say the election's fake, but I guess, you know, the motivation to not get you and your family killed or go to jail after you're out of office, that's probably a bigger motivator.
You know, I think it's fair to say that at the very least, Trump has a Napoleon complex. He doesn't want to just be the leader of the free world. He wants to run the world. He wants to be Caesar.
Yeah, he's the only one that knows how to do it. He believes that so much that he's convinced that, you know, 100 million people, you know, like 70 million people that he's, you know, the only one that can do it. And, you know, and it's because he's not a politician. It's because he's not a politician. He's not an insider. He's going to drain the swamp. he's a businessman. He's a very successful businessman, and he wears long ties, and so, you know. But anyway, moving on.
That's his trademark. But anyway, okay. We talked about we've talked about the two wackos, Sidney Powell and Michael Flynn.
Yeah,
and this business of martial law, and I don't think a lot of people really know what martial law means, okay? It really means pretty much this. Number one, the military controls all normal civil activities.
I have on that one, before you go further, is how large, I mean, you're going to take the entire military of the entire country, probably. How big is the military right now? How many people are in the military?
Well, it would probably, I don't know.
Because you got 350 million Americans all over a giant country. How do you enforce, how does a federal force enforce martial law?
Well, you have to remember that in addition to regular army, we've got National Guard units.
National Guard. And maybe also get the police involved. And they, you know, these most police departments are on.
Oh yeah! Trump's right wingers for sure.
Oh yeah, They'd probably go in. They'd go in with them too.
Yeah, but they would take normal civil activities. That would to include police. The military would become the standing police force. Period.
But the police would help because I don't think there's enough military to truly police the entire country.
Yeah,
I don't think there's enough. But they could get the police to basically be part of that force, I bet.
Okay, and another thing is you have no constitutional rights. You can take your First Amendment rights and all that.
They can take anybody, sweep them up and put them in jail or execute them or whatever.
Exactly. You could be, you have no civil rights. For example, you can be arrested and jailed indefinitely.
That exists for now in other countries.
Oh, exactly. Well, in third world countries that are under fascist dictatorship.
I'm trying to think, is it Romania or Bulgaria? I don't know. It's sorry, guys, if you're from there, but I'm trying to think. There's a country right now that has a pretty strong, I think totalitarian almost out there that's like that. I mean, you could just get plucked off the street for any reason.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention the foreign country because I was reading again. I read this in Der Spiegel, folks, and you probably the Trump people are wanting to shoot me because I'm reading German magazines, but I read the BBC.
Actually, you're probably safe.
And all that. But anyway, there was one article that really kind of caught my eye, and that is that a lot of European countries are really, really deeply concerned about this business of Trump possibly calling for martial law, because, and especially the old Eastern Bloc countries, you know, that were under communist rule since the end of World War II, and then finally,
what's that one? Sorry, keep going. I'll remember it.
Yeah. Anyway, that these people over the last 40 years or so have seen a number of coups.
Belarus.
Belarus. That's right.
What I was thinking.
Yeah. And they're saying this has all the markings of a coup d'état. And, you know, of course, they know what they're talking about because they've lived through it. They've seen it. I mean, they know what it entails. And, like I said, I just don't think, I hope even the people on the right will, you know, stop and think and realize what martial law would really, truly be.
Yeah.
It would be the day this.
It's not a state you ever want to be in. You never want to be in that state. And again, I hope that the militias stay at a small number and, you know, they don't, well, martial law, of course, that's, I just can't imagine them doing that. And Well, but again, I can imagine a lot of things that have happened and they have. So
the closest we've ever come to that was when the Civil War broke out. Lincoln did take away a lot of civil rights and whatever, but we were the country itself was at war. But it wasn't, you know, really true strict martial law, but to some extent it was. But I just can't even, I mean, as an individual, I cannot imagine this country going under martial law. That is absolutely contrary to everything we believe in as a democracy.
And so it would be under martial law so they can do what?
Well, for one thing,
change the election results.
Michael Flynn was purporting. Yeah, if you impose martial law, you can have a new election under the auspices of the military, because again, that's a civil activity. Elections are a civil activity. If we're under martial law, the military would control elections.
So the military would control the election. They would be the ones accepting the ballots, counting the ballots.
Yes, yes.
In charge of that, with guns pointed at your face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's like, yeah, in Venezuela, you go, with here, you know, you vote for this person or I kill you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, here's another thing that really tells me that Trump is at least considering this, because, and listen to this and just hear it, we had wholesale firings. The Secretary of Defense was fired, and the Pentagon heads of intelligence and planning were fired. Okay, now, why would he do that? Well, because he wants to put his own people in there who would not resist martial law, because he's got to have the military behind him. I mean, to go to martial law, and well, in fact, the military is kind of between a rock and a hard place, because the Constitution says that, of course, the president is the commander-in-chief.
What does it say about a disputed period where there's been an election, but there's a current dispute? Does it say that?
I don't know. That's a good point. Yeah. Again, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but here's what...
George Conway, where are you?
Yeah, and this stuff, and they said that this meeting even scared the living hell out of Rudy Giuliani. I mean, supposedly he was shocked, you know, so I'm like, well, at least he's got some damn sense, you know. But here's what I'm thinking, that he didn't, this business of this idea of a military coup didn't just happen in the last few days. No, he's been thinking about this after and possibly even before the election. He's thinking, okay, what if I lose the election? And this is an option, and so I think he's been planning this for a long time.
It could have started around the impeachment time, you know. It might have made him realize, oh, they could.
I'm vulnerable.
You know, I'm vulnerable. Yeah, and I got to start thinking about how I could be invulnerable.
Yeah,
and let's start planning that. You know, it's crazy.
I saw in an article that. I forget his name, but he's a professor of history at Yale University, and he said all this looks and smells like a coup.
Yeah,
that really bugs the holy crap out of me.
What else do you have on your list? Anything else?
Well,
I think we're gonna take a quick break, but
why don't you? Yeah, that's good. Well,
give me a little tidbit before
Well,
we go.
The next thing I want to hit, and you've hit on this already, is this business about militias. Mm-hmm. I've looked into these militias, and it's amazing. I don't know what I can say.
I think, you know, we were talking about getting people on the show, and I'm hoping, you know, obviously we've been a little one-sided today, and we tend to be a little on the left. We have our views here. We want to try to be open-minded. There's a point where it becomes, you can't have a conversation because somebody is just not reasonable. You know, there has to be a level of reasonableness, right?
Yeah. They're not receptive.
I'm not sure if those groups are able to talk reasonably. I think it might be that they might be too far gone. And I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, and that's probably what they need to like work through some of the stuff. But like, I think it's a very complex. Each one of those people that's in those groups has a lot of issues. We all do individually to choose to do that with your life.
Well,
you know, and I would love to talk to somebody in any way, like to try to get a, you know, I'm not, it, this would not be for us in any sensational like ratings or anything like that. It would just be for understanding. Like, I would like to understand you, you know, even as hard as that is, I would like to understand your point. And this is, you know, I'm trying to make this podcast a place for people to feel safe to talk about things and that you're going to be heard. You're, no matter what you think, you're going to be heard. And, you know, we definitely have our opinions, and that's the way it is. But I want to listen. I try to be fair, and you know, but I'd be interesting to hear someone from that side at some point. I don't know if it's possible. I really don't. I think so much goes along with that. The you know, the willingness for somebody to come onto a show and talk about stuff, or that step right there means you're open minded. So that you know, the fact that you're willing to do that. So if that person would come on, that means they're, or they've been convinced by somebody to do it, or whatever. But I'd like to do it on the left too. I'd like to do it from somebody who's a far left. But maybe we're sort of tiptoeing into dangerous waters here. But my goal is not to polarize. My goal is not to make people feel that they're wrong. I don't want people. I'm not trying to sit here and tell you you're wrong. I have my own opinions, but like when you're on and you're here, you can speak, and we might have some you know, discourse about what you're saying, and I'm going to ask questions. They might be tough, and I'm not fake media. I'm like, not fake news. I'm just a person trying to understand these very heavy emotions, these very heavy thoughts, these very, very heavy feelings about our country and humanity and the way we're supposed to live, you know, and taking up arms and killing fellow citizens, and on the left destroying businesses. Why are you destroying businesses? Why are you doing that?
You
like,
see,
that doesn't make sense either.
Exactly.
I don't want to totally dwell on the right, because what they're doing on the left is probably possibly inflaming the right more than they would be.
To me, they're equally guilty.
But like, it's possible that, I mean, look, the reason why the left, I'm going to just philosophize for one second. Maybe the reason why Antifa and Antifa is just, it's not all about Antifa. It's not anti-fascist. I think it's kind of more, that's really complicated, because why do people go out and throw bricks at businesses and break the windows? I'd like to know that. It's probably a million different reasons.
Yeah, well, I'd like to know what fills you with so much hate that you're willing to take up arms and go into the streets. And we've seen it happen. We know, I mean, well, like I said, last weekend, weekend before this, when they had the Trump rallies in D.C. and Olympia, we already know all these people, and this goes on both sides. This is the Proud Boys and Antifa. Yeah. We know they're fully capable of physical violence because they got into knife and gun fights. You know, so I don't know.
Well, I personally want to know beyond that, like, Antifa sometimes will go out and it's almost like a mini revolution. And I think they're driven sometimes by, I'm speculating, but there's also people who are really struggling and very, very poor and are pissed off at the inequity of our society. I think that's probably what drives the extreme left a lot. The unfairness. And there's some people that are protesting that are on the borderline of not having a meal, a next meal, you know, and there's people that are just, they're at their last, they don't have anything. They're struggling. I don't, and for whatever reason, and they sort of get really pissed off, and they, and once something happens, everybody else wants to do it and it blows up. You know, like somebody throws a brick, everybody starts breaking stuff.
Yeah. The mob psychology.
And there's a possibility that somebody's paying these people to go in there and throw bricks to start this stuff. I don't know. That's a big unknown, but, and who knows who would be paying people to do that, right or left wing people. I have no freaking clue, but you know, nobody really knows because they come and go, they're wearing black. They leave, and they're not probably from the areas. And then the peaceful protesters, sometimes they become less peaceful. Mm-hmm. They may have started peaceful, but then they get pissed off and they're like, oh yeah, something's, let's go, you know, break stuff because it's started. If it's already started, it's hard to start it, but it's easy to jump onto it.
Exactly. And then, it's easy to start, but it's a whole hell of a lot harder to stop.
But I think there are people all across the board. I don't know enough about Antifa. I'd like to know more too. But this is a signal of our society. If we're starting to see these groups growing and they're growing, it's a signal of our society of like real problems. Real problems and unfairness and then the people on the right just, man.
Well, you know, it's when we're talking about these radical groups, Antifa, and this goes Antifa and the Proud Boys. Okay, the only thing that you or I know about these groups is what we read.
Right.
And so, like, I know what they stand for. I know their mantra.
You're going to go to a Proud Boys meeting?
Absolutely. Cool. I would, you know, hey, I would like to.
All right. Tom's willing to go, guys.
Yeah, I would, man. I'd like to go to an Antifa meeting, too. Ooh, anyway.
Boy, I don't know. Either one of those sounds a little
look,
sketchy,
man,
to me.
I listened to the whole hour and 42 minutes of the Trump rally speakers. Yeah. I mean, you know, going to an Antifa meeting is nothing after that, believe
That's
me.
That's true.
That was torture. But see, now you got me lost.
That's all right. We were going to take a break. We're already kind of far in. We'll come back for another little bit of a more further along here. I'm sorry, I'm just kind of stuttering, but I'm gonna play a little bit of music. Uh-oh, what happened? Oh, I'm not connected. All right, anyway, technical difficulties. We'll see you in a bit. Bye.
Okay.
Okay, we're back. Took a little mini break. And what we're going to do, we're going to talk a little bit about the term militia right now. And Tom has enlightened me a little bit on that. I was trying to understand, why is it called them? We were talking and I said, why is it called, why are they, these groups called a militia? Because in the old days, militias were government-backed groups and, you know, kind of similar to the National Guard is now.
Yes, exactly.
So why don't you tell us a little more about that?
Okay, militias originally, like even before the Revolutionary War, there were militias in different states or different areas. And what they were, they essentially were National Guardsmen. And the militias, for example, when the British invaded the United States for the Revolutionary War, the militias were called up. So these were like farmers and whatever, but they were hit with a call to arms and they were fighting a foreign enemy. Okay.
Right.
So just like today, a lot of like in Afghanistan, there are a number of National Guardsmen over there. Okay, so basically what happened as far as the real true militia goes, they evolved into the National Guard. Now, the National Guard is somewhat unique. It's part of the Army, but yeah, it's not quite part of the Army. So the National Guard really has two commanders in chief. First one is the governor. The governor can mobilize his state National Guard or state militia, if you will. We don't call it that anymore. And normally, and he can do it for any reason. And seeing as how we're not in a war with an invading foreign power, or whatever, mostly it's for disaster relief. Well, like right now, for example, they have a number of guardsmen deployed in nursing homes and food banks to distribute food, and and they kind of act as security at the nursing homes to make sure people going in and out are following the rules and all that. And of course, we know what happens. They're always there in like when we get tornadoes or floods or whatever. But their other commander in chief is the president. So basically, and pun intended, they're trumped. The president trumps the governor. The president can mobilize a National Guard, can authorize National Guards to be mobilized any time. So again, it's kind of like, I guess the best way to describe it, the National Guard is like a state army, state army overseen by the state, but then in times of need, it will also join with the regular army to engage in foreign wars. Well, in fact, I just thought of this. The group that liberated Dachau in World War II were weekend warriors or National Guardsmen. Mm-hmm. They were a guard panzer, armored division that liberated Dachau. And as I was telling John earlier, prior to World War I, the standing army of the U.S. was really pretty small. But what we had, again, were National Guard units. Every state had National Guard, so when World War I broke out, the president called up the National Guard units, and one of them happened to be my maternal grandfather, he was an infantryman, and he wound up fighting in Luxembourg, and he was gassed. And so he spent the rest of his days in and out of VA hospitals because of that. But anyway, again, after World War I, our standing army wasn't that big. And, of course, when we got engaged in World War II, they had to enlist, they had to draft in World War I, but then they had to use it again in World War II because they needed all the bodies they could get in the military.
So, Vietnam, and the military was pretty strong after, like, the 60s, and we always had a huge military. Right.
Oh,
after
yeah.
50s,
yeah.
World War II.
Well, after World War II.
World War II and on, had a huge military. We never had that issue anymore. So the idea of militias and National Guard still was there, but for a different reason. Right. And so how did the term militia get so distorted? It seems like, I'm really curious about this, because it's turned into this term of, like, these guys that are sort of, they don't want to obey federal law or some sort of law that they don't believe in, so they take up arms to fight against it. But that was never really the initial intent of that term militia, like the Michigan militia or some of these other groups.
In Indiana, it's the White Caps.
And there's a lot of groups out there. And I don't know I'm really interested to know how that evolved into these groups, because there was always been plenty of military to go around since World War II. And these guys just get discontented with the way things are going, and they, don't want to pay federal taxes because they're not seeing any reason to, or they don't like the person in power, or they love guns, or all of the above.
Well, I think, John, you put it the best way. They're actually groups of vigilantes. And they have bastardized the term militia into something it was never, ever intended to be. But now it's just like I said, they're really anything but what the militia was.
Right.
The original militia was all about defending the United States, and now these militia groups are anti-government.
The true term militia is a positive term. The current term of militia is very negative.
Very negative, yes.
So I think what needs to happen is we need to change the term for these groups to vigilante justice people. Yeah. They're vigilantes.
Yeah, they are.
And that's really what they are. They're purporting their own version of justice onto people. They're not they are not following laws. They're following their own laws, their own set of laws that are not, they have not been agreed to in their current society. That's what a vigilantes go out there and they try to, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse and all those guys that go out there and just decide they know what's best for the country and they're going to go and they're heavily armed. They're vigilantes. And if that's what it really needs to be thought of instead of militia, militia is a confusing term, you know, just like, you know, socialism is a confusing term, but vigilante is not confusing. Vigilante is very straightforward. It's like, you know exactly what, you know, you're going beyond outside the law to perform some sort of justice in your own mind and whether it abides by any laws or not. And militia is like, you know, I had never thought about it. It actually was a positive. It was a government backed group. And so it's an interesting thing. And I think that I'm going to start referring to them as vigilantes instead of militia.
Yeah, because originally the militias were the military. Yep. They were the protectors and defenders.
Let's think of the word US militia. Militia.
You know, militia. But, you know, actually, we were talking about how this has been bastardized.
Mm.
Okay. As you know, we were talking about this earlier, that the right-wing militias of today are actually modeled after the Posse Comitatus. And that was an organization that was formed in the 60s. And I think you know a little bit more about them than I do because you were talking about an attempted takeover that they did in California.
Oh, they came out of Portland, Oregon, started in Portland, Oregon in the late 60s. This is, I think, what the majority of the right-wing vigilante groups go back to. It's the that name I can't remember, Posse
Comitatus.
Comitatus, and they attempted to take over counties. Their rule was that what they believed in was that the county was the highest form of government, and there's nothing mm-hmm. above that. There's no state. There's no federal. It's county. It's county sheriff has the most power. And if the county sheriff, there actually is something in there that I read that the county sheriff is not, you know, is not following, you know, the laws of the county, he should be taken out and hung.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how serious those guys were. Mm-hmm. But they tried to take over Alpine County in California. It's in the Sierra Nevada mountains back in the 70s, I think early 70s. And they tried to do it by voting. They tried to do it by getting enough people to vote for these people who were part of this group, and they failed, but they came close.
Yeah.
And you know, there's, you know, Oregon's famous, it's funny because Portland, Oregon, you think of as a bastion for liberalism and
but
Oregon is a very confusing state because like you get outside of Portland and it is not a blue, it is not blue. It is very red and outside of Portland and in some areas, but it's a complicated thing, but that does seem like the sort of original group that started this idea, because it's late 60s. That's, I mean, were there vigilante slash militia groups before them? I don't know.
Yeah,
we'd have to look into that one. We'll try to clarify that next time, but
it's that was, well, there was so much turmoil, you know, as having basically, you know, growing up in the 60s, you know, there was so much turmoil at that time. That had to be the ultimate.
Especially late 60s, right? Mostly late, like 67 on.
You had
66, 67.
You had the racial issues going on. Mm-hmm. You had Vietnam.
When did the Jim Jones stuff happen? Do you remember?
Oh, that was the early 70s. That was 70s, yeah. Jonestown. Yeah. Well, and you know.
That's how taking the Kool-Aid came about, right?
He's another famous Hoosier. He was born in Richmond,
there you go.
Indiana, and he...
We're persuasive people, you know.
Yeah, he originally had... It was there's a big church in downtown Indianapolis, and that was the original People's Temple.
Wow.
And then he moved on to California and set up a People's Temple out there, and then from there they went to Ghana. Mm-hmm. He's one of our favorite sons, that one, yeah.
Remember David Koresh?
David Crow, yeah.
In Waco, Texas?
Yeah, Branch Davidian.
Branch Davidians. They're listed on that, list.
Yeah, they are listed as a militia group. In fact, you and I both looked into this, and I'm sorry, I keep doing it. You and I both looked into this, John, and by my count, and this is as of today, and I could be wrong. This is just what I counted. There are about 53 militias in the United States in all.
Vigilantes.
And again, here in Hoosier land, our vigilantes are known as the White Caps. Now, there's subcategories. Now, these are really classified as subcategories. The Army of God. That's okay. The Aryan Nation, boy, I really like the sounds
of that.
That's
prison. You get go to prison and you got to join the Aryan Nation.
You got
white or I don't know. I don't know how it works. I've never been to prison.
Aryan Nation. That's real big behind bars.
Big times.
Of course, the ever famous Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
You've got the Patriot Movement. That's one I had never heard.
Sounds
of.
Sounds friendly.
Heard of the others.
Sounds
friendly. Oh yeah, the Proud Boys. And this one, now, if this isn't racist, folks, I don't know what is, the White League.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also know, I've heard recently the Boogaloo Boys have been in the, or the Boogaloo, whatever they are, Boogaloos have been in the news a lot, and then the Oath Keepers are the ones that I heard of. And I saw the Oath Keepers were national. A lot of the other ones are local or regional groups. But that Oath Keeper one is particularly scary. It's a national group. Those are the guys that were protecting or providing extra security at the Trump events, heavily, heavily armed. So there you go.
Oh, what was,
They'll be first in line to sign up for the Trump army, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about enlisting myself just to get on the inside. I know. Hey, I take it for the team all the time, John. Come on. You know, I mean, I am willing to join Antifa.
The ultimate mole. He'll go both ways.
Yeah. And well, like I said, I've been trying to join the Illuminati for years, but I can't find them. I keep looking for them, and I can't find them. I hear all these things about them. They're behind this, that, and the other, and I still haven't been able to find them.
It's because you never will. They control everything. So.
Well, Illuminati, if you're out there, please contact us. I want to speak to one of you.
They're already 5 steps ahead of you.
So yeah, I'm sure.
There's no chance. All right, so... are we going to talk about this the entire episode? Is that our whole episode? We're just going to talk about these groups. I think it's worthwhile, but is there anything else we want to touch on? Anything else major in the news or pertinent on your brain?
Well, you know, we were talking about this the other day, that socialism. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that's a if you're a ultra writer, that is a
makes your body
word,
makes your body tingle
word. Oh
when
yeah
you hear that
yeah,
word
just, it's just sends chills down your spine. Of course, you know, Trump in 2016 and for the 2020 election, he was saying, oh, you know, if you vote Democrats, you're going to vote socialism, and that's going to be, you're going to be taxed to death, and the economy is going to go to hell and all this. But what he failed to mention was, folks, we're already a socialist democracy. I know that's a bold statement, but we are.
I will say we're definitely not an absolute capitalist country.
Oh, no, we're not.
We are definitely not. The fact that we have Social Security, welfare, and Medicare puts us in the social democrat. We're social democrats, there's a bunch of different terms that they throw around. Democratic socialism, social democrat, things like that. And this is the whole thing about socialism, I think, that it's there are many, many, many different types of socialism. There's not just one socialism. So when somebody says socialism, they're not being specific enough. I think there's about 20 different versions of socialism. One of them is communism, and one of them is market communism. So market communism would be China. State communism would be, there's even branches of communism like state and market communism, right? So to say just socialist, and those fall under socialism. Mm-hmm. Like state and market communism fall under socialism. And so to say socialism is like saying it's such a broad thing to say. You have democratic socialism, you have social democratic, and there's all these different slight variations of socialism, and you have the United States, which some people would call us responsible capitalism, which means that it's a version of capitalism that has elements of socialism. Mm-hmm. You know, so we might be in that category right now, although a lot of people wouldn't say we're that responsible. But like if unleashed capitalism at its true nature doesn't care about any citizen. OK, that's the whole truth about capitalism. It does not care about its citizens. It's just focused on, you know, profits and making, you know, the strongest survive and things like that. The winners and winners and losers. And there's always going to be more losers than winners. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's just so much, it's so much more complicated than the politicians make it when they say a vote for Democrats is a vote to turn your country into Soviet Union or, you know, mm-hmm. they're making it so they're actually lying. They're actually kind of distorting and saying it's a huge disservice to say that. And I know it's really hard to do, but if they're going to go there, if they're going to say socialism, they have to be a little bit more responsible than that. It's right. Like you're kind of spreading disinformation, you know, because, you know, the Nordic countries like Denmark and, you know, all Sweden,
Scandinavian
countries, countries are social democratic countries, and right. That's heavily market based with political freedom. You know, they have political freedom, they have market based, but there's some state run things like healthcare and education.
Sure. Yeah.
And like that isn't a bad model. You know, it's just that you have to be able to control your citizens in some shape or form. And we have an agreed upon set of socialist things, which is Medicare. And we do agree to pay some of our taxes towards that. But we don't really have a lot of state run stuff. You know, like we don't have state run healthcare. You know, we have. Everything's private here.
Well, you know? to hear the right wingers say it, Obamacare is state run. You know, yeah, I know.
It's just, you know, the funny thing is, like, the whole thing about Obamacare was so ridiculous because all he did was, like, well, there's a couple things. Like, he required people to have an insurance. And the second thing was that he offered another possibility for having insurance. It's, you can go through the government. They're still private. Every kind of private insurance you could ever imagine. We also have an option for government insurance. And if you're lower income, then you get assistance.
Yeah.
Is it that bad?
Yeah.
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, yes, healthcare costs have gone way, 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 way high in the last 10 years. And it's ridiculous. It's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't think it had a whole lot to do with Obamacare. It has to do with the healthcare industry and the high costs of everything and the middleman and everything. But we'll get into that in another topic, and maybe I'll bring a few experts in on that one.
Yeah, it would be a good thing to have economic, some economists call in, you know, some people that
somebody that knows about
and studied it,
healthcare in particular, mm-hmm. like an economist who understands healthcare, which is or, you know, even my wife who understands healthcare a little bit, but that not, she doesn't understand the economics of it. But anyway, getting back.
Okay. Here's in what I found the general definition of socialism. Mm-hmm. Socialism suggests that contribution is, and a lot of this sounds pretty democratic to me, you know, and kind of capitalist, but it says, anyway, it suggests that contribution is made from everyone according to their ability, but they get back according to the size of their contribution.
Merit-based?
Merit-based, yeah.
Yeah, it's, so it's a merit-based system.
Right.
In a way, yeah.
Right, and
it's just a different way of looking at it.
Yeah, and it says that, for example, you know, it's like we were saying, if we are a socialist democracy, whether you want to admit it or not, let's look. Of course, the obvious things are Social Security, Medicare, but looking beyond that, look at all the subsidies, like farm subsidies, school subsidies.
That's huge.
There's subsidies coming out the yin-yang. And yes, Obamacare is part socialist in that it provides health care for those who can't afford it. It doesn't provide health care for everybody. Those who can afford it pay for it, and those who can't are assisted, or they're cut. They're, one way or another, everybody's covered. I don't have a problem with that at all. But to say that we're not socialist already, folks.
Well, in 1952, Truman said socialism has been getting blamed for everything, but what is it? This is in 1952. Truman said,
Right after World War II.
Social Security, farm price supports, you know, and bank deposit insurance, free and independent labor, and almost everything that helps all people. That's what socialism was to Harry Truman in 1952. I mean, you think, listen to those one more time. Social Security, farm price supports, bank deposit insurance, free and independent labor. So those were tweaks to capitalism that they made.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Those were important because they're integral to our society now. Those are all good things. And those are things that help all people. That's what he was saying. And I'm not a huge Harry Truman fan, but, you know, he was just like, these things make sense, right? I mean, you know, every one of those things that I mentioned makes sense. So, you know, would you call them, are those negatives in people's minds of people that are saying these horrible things about socialism right now? Are all those, do they not want those things?
Well, you know, here's an example. And, oh yeah, and really socialism, I would say the birth of socialism in this country happened in the 30s under the Roosevelt administration.
Right, right.
FDR. We got, you know, the New Deal and Works Project Administration, Tennessee Valley Authority, and all that. And it was great because it pulled this country out of a deep, dark depression.
Right.
It worked. It worked very well. But my answer to your question, and I've thought about this, I would like to go to somebody on the far right, especially somebody my age or older, and say, okay, you're anti-socialist. That's right. Okay, well, then that means we ought to take away your Social Security and your Medicare. Now, what do you think they'd say? Say, okay, if you really want to eliminate socialism, one of the first things, well, the biggest bill we pay, and you pointed this out the other day, is Medicare. The
biggest chunk of your taxes goes to Medicare.
Yeah. So
it's a safety net for older people.
And I'll bet you anything there isn't a damn one of them say, oh, yeah, take it away, it's socialist.
And this is the issue I have with this blanket socialism is a bad thing, you know. You know, the problem is our country and our people don't have enough time to sit down and think about things on this level. and the politicians are taking advantage of that. They're taking advantage of that. And they're spreading disinformation for their own personal gain. And it's a disservice because just like Scott was saying about hydrochloroquine, because you're purposely doing this in the wrong way. They're doing it in the other way with this stuff, with this socialism crap. Because, you know what? we are already a little socialist in this country.
Yeah.
And I think it's working pretty freaking well. And, you know, at least the programs that are in place right now, I'm not saying I don't, there's a lot of things I don't want on the far left that they're talking about doing. I don't agree with some of that stuff. I think future society, maybe if we continue to evolve, maybe, but right now, no, I think we can continue as is and keep working away. But just to vilify the term so much and not even have any sort of like backing to it, mm-hmm. other than just to say, oh, we're not China, we're not Venezuela, we don't want to end up like that. You guys want to, and we don't. I'm like, that is a freaking lie. And it's a lie, and it's a distorted truth. It's a distortion of the truth, and it's manipulating people who don't have the time or wherewithal to understand the finer points, and it's not fair, you know. And you know, because the citizens today don't have time to, you know, if they listen to our podcast, they might, but
listen to our podcast, yeah. Please tell your friends, your neighbors.
I don't know. I mean, we're getting into some deeper concepts here, and I really am enjoying it, because this is the stuff I've been thinking about for a long time, and I just don't think that most people are, and it's so important, you know. It's so important that we understand this stuff, and I think in other countries people do take a little more time to understand the stuff, and they do care about, you know, what the direction their country's headed and stuff, but I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they're all just living in the dark too.
Well, you know, there is this misconception I see it as a misconception that people in the far right will say, if it's socialism, it's not democracy. And I think we get confused. Democracy is a form of government.
Right.
It's a form of free elections, civil rights, and all that. Socialism is actually an economic
Correct.
System.
Yeah. And I have a point on that, actually. Yes, that's a very, very good point. It's something to really remember, is that democracy and socialism are not on the same level.
They're not socialism, incompatible.
Socialism is on the same level as capitalism. Capitalism and socialism are economic systems.
Exactly.
The problem that I have seen, and the issue that I have with America right now, is that capitalism has transcended into out of just being an economic system as to being a system for a whole country to go by in every way. It's going to a social system. It's going to our, in every possible direction, and everything we think about is capitalism. Everything's money based. You know, it's not, I may not be explaining this quite right, but everything is thought about through capitalist view, instead of it being like, what is, you know, everything is money, dollars and cents. And, you know, maybe we need to slow down on that a little bit, you know. And the examples of that are healthcare and education, because, mm-hmm. you know, those healthcare and education should be just things that we, it's like, care about your fellow citizen. You care about your kids and your future, and you want to support that. And it's not, shouldn't be a major profit center. You know, it's just like, this is part of our society where we're, you know, it's beyond capitalism. It's not, it's, you know, it should be separate from capitalism a little bit, you know. I think maybe healthcare could be somewhat cap. I don't want it to be completely state run. I don't think, I'm not sure about that, I don't need it to be where it is. Like, healthcare is, it's a whole, maybe we'll make that like episode 10 or something, where we have time to do some research and get a good guest on who can talk about healthcare. That's a huge, huge issue. It's just killing us.
Oh my God.
I mean, in so many ways, and it's killing us economically, and like how it's like, you get sick and you might be in debt the rest of your life, you know? And like my first child was, 8 weeks premature. He was in the NICU for 7 weeks, and the bill was $1.8 million.
Yeah, exactly.
We had insurance, of course. We didn't have to pay very much of that, but $1.8 million for 53 days in a NICU where they're just monitoring him at night. Mm-hmm. Something's wrong there. That's there's something really wrong, because if that's happening to me, that's happening to a lot of people. I mean, he didn't even have any major health problems. So that was a huge eye opener, and like, okay, we are screwed. If this is not sustainable. This is not sustainable at all.
I know when I heard that amount, it about knocked me off my chair. Yeah. I thought at 1.8 million. And he, like you said, he wasn't really critically ill.
No, he wasn't. He just needed to be monitored by a nurse 24 hours. That was it.
Exactly.
And they didn't do hardly anything to him. $35,000 a night.
And for that, you were billed at $1.8
million. $1.8 million.
Think about education, folks. Public education is about as socialist as it gets. Because think back, years ago, a lot of people were illiterate because they couldn't go to school, because they couldn't afford to go to school. It was only the people that had the money that could educate their kids. And then we did get public school systems way back when, so that everybody got at least elementary educations. But at the same time, There was no assistance for those who wanted to go on to higher education, to college. So actually what the situation was, it was only the sons and daughters of the wealthy who could go to college, and everybody else just didn't have the money to do it. Okay, so now we got student loans. Well, hell, that's socialism right there, you know.
Yeah.
But think about that. I went to school on student loans. You know, I was born lower middle class. My family did not have money to pay for me, especially not to go to professional school. I spent 12 years in school. And thank God for student loans. But what it did is it opened up the door for people who really wanted to get higher education, whatever, could do it. They could do it because of this socialist program called student loans.
Well, is that socialist or is that capitalist? Because they're making money off the students. That sort of blends in to where one of the issues with like predatory lending on students. And what if the total student debt is like $3 trillion
it's amazing. So, yeah.
And look, I do believe that if you're, no matter what your age, if you sign a document saying that you owe money, You're signing this loan for, it's going to be $200,000. You have to pay it, and you have to have a little buyer beware. But at the same time, I think there's definitely, like, my wife had went to medical school and her loan got sold to some other company went up to 9% and she didn't even know it, and it's like, whoa, I owe how much? And you know, that kind of stuff is that's part of the capitalist system. But I don't. I mean, you're saying getting a student loan is a socialist thing?
Yeah, it's
to me, it seems a little more capitalist.
Originally it was a federal program.
Oh, yeah. Oh, those are federal loans.
Yeah, those
okay.
are federal
so
loans.
Got it. Okay, yeah, not private loans.
But like for me, I love student loans. I mean, I had to pay them back. I mean, God knows, they paid for me to go all the way from undergrad through professional
school. So, yeah, you're right. That is a version of it.
Yeah,
that is a version of it.
I paid for bachelor degrees for both of my daughters. And of course, I had to pay it all back. But my gosh, even though I was working actively as a dentist, it's still a lot of money to have.
So it just seems like the stigma of the word needs to just kind of. Need to keep chipping away at that, because it's not even a real thing. I mean, I get it, because socialism is an umbrella term for all of those versions of it, right? So when you say that word, it could be any of them.
Yes.
You know, but you have to be more specific. And, you know, even our current responsible capitalism, which I don't really agree with that we're responsible right now, but We're not absolute capitalists. At least we have some programs to help certain people. But you know, as I said in previous podcasts, I think with Scott, is that it's going to fail at some point.
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah,
there's a cycle of all economic systems that where they end up failing. You know, and but I think we're smart enough to tweak it. And we did in the 30s, and we added a few programs that, like, wait a minute, we have to make sure that our population is going to survive this, and we're going to make it. It has to. We have to, you know, like right now, the wealth gap is so high. We have to be aware that we have to make sure that we're not going too far in the wealth gap, where we have to take care of our citizens. We have to make sure our citizens are not suffering. You know, like we there's too much that like we should never have suffered. I mean, we also you gotta, like, life is hard and things are hard. We can't make everybody happy all the time. You can't, it's not, the life is not perfect. There's always going to be some people who are suffering, and it's unfortunate. But if it becomes a crazy high percentage proportion of your population, and that's just unacceptable. And, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to suffer, but I don't know if there's a way around that. You know, like in life, life is tough, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, John, you were talking about capitalism failing. Well, here's my spin on that. I don't think it's going to fail per se, but I think its predominance in our economic system is going to decrease. Let's face it, our government has evolved. And in fact, the Constitution says that, you know, that it needs that this Constitution could be amended or whatever at any time. They saw that things would evolve with time. And we are not the same country governmentally that we were, say, in the 1800s, yeah. The early 1800s. So I think what's going to happen, and I hope what happens, is that capitalism will become less and less a predominant factor, less and less of an economic predominant factor. Maybe socialism will come more and will evolve to an economy that's not totally capitalist-based or as capitalist-based as it is right now, because you're right, the gap between the haves and the have-nots has gotten way too wide. In fact, this COVID virus business has done nothing but aggravate that. I mean, yeah. this virus that came along, it's of nobody's fault, whatever. You've got all kinds of people out there that are all of a sudden, hey, I think, can't pay my bills.
I think as it continues, you're going to see more and more of the quote-unquote Antifa groups. They're not Antifa, but they're just people who are tired of it. They're revolting because of their, you know,
inequities.
Yeah. And that's going to continue to grow. So you're going to see more and more violence from them because they're desperate.
Yeah.
Right. And they have nothing else. They have nothing to lose. And they're just pissed off at society and pissed off of how they've been treated. And there hasn't been any thought towards people who, you know, and it's getting less and less. And then you're going to have more, when that happens more, that inflames more on the left, or they call it the left because you think of, like, people who are less fortunate to be the left, right?
Well, this is true.
Even though there's a lot of less fortunate people on the right too, which is an odd thing. But the left-wing groups, they're driven, a lot of them are driven by that inequity. And that makes them go out and throw bricks at businesses. Mm-hmm. The right wing, you know, domestic terrorist vigilante groups will go out there and see this, like, big flame up of all this bad stuff, and they're going to grow, and those two groups might grow, and that's the offshoot. That could be what the failure is of capitalism. That could be a sort of, we could be at the beginning of stages of something like that, where, you know, you're starting to see this. It's almost like a revolution.
Yes.
Right? It's kind of like a revolution.
Hopefully a peaceful revolution.
you're seeing revolutionary factions right now. And it's small, but it's sort of the beginnings of it. And that is a sign of something failing, like Rome failing. You know, I don't know a ton about Rome, but, you know, the Roman Empire.
Corruption within,
taking it too far, taking things too far. And so that could be the signal of failure. And we want to try to, I just think we can get ahead of it. I think we're smart enough to get ahead of it. But we have to stop using the term socialism as this, like, devil word, and that causes everybody to have a conniption. It's not fair. I mean, we already use social services in our country. You know, we already have socialist things that we've been doing for 80 years, 70 years. So, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think politicians are going to continue to, you know, try to, win support of their existing base, who already feel that socialism is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to build on that. It's going to continue, unfortunately. But I don't know how to stop that. I guess if my podcast becomes number one and then everybody listens to it, maybe that's how it works.
Gee, wouldn't that be nice? We get sponsors and everything.
Saving the world.
Yeah. Hey, listen, folks. And again, I'm going to give a little plug here. John has a magnificent podcast studio set up here. It's got all this nice new equipment. And so if you're listening and you want to do a podcast and you're not capable of doing it on your own, John has this facility for people who want to make their own podcast. And of course it's in Carmel, Indiana, the uppity area.
Hey, Indianapolis has a really good airport. So if you want to fly out.
Yeah, it does. So yeah, if you want to fly in. Yeah, in fact, that was the top rated airport in North America a couple of years ago.
If you've never been to Indiana, you should come.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's just wonderful, especially the climate.
Especially in February. Come right in the middle of February.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But in all seriousness, if you're in the area or whatever and you want to make a podcast and you need a place to do it, this is the place to do it.
Thank you, Tom. Right here. I appreciate the plug.
Yeah.
I am doing that. My parent company is called Carmel Sound Lab.
Oh, okay.
Carmel Sound Lab. So I'm getting my website together, but you're free to email me if you have anything, any questions, or if you're interested in doing your own podcast, if you're still listening on episode 5 at 115 minutes, the John and Tom Show at gmail.com. I think that's going to be close to it for today, unless you have anything else that you want to chat about.
I think we've gone a while. We can continue this discussion on socialism. I also want to discuss communism and compare the two, because a lot of people erroneously, and I mean erroneously, equate socialism with communism,
right?
And nothing could be farther from the truth. I mean, they're two totally different entities.
Communism is inside of the concept of socialism. Communism is a branch of socialism.
Well, you know what it is? It's socialism taken to the radical extreme.
Yeah, yeah.
And
maybe I put this on my website. I could start a John and Tom website too. But there is a kind of a graph that shows you state run, like authoritarian versus more politically free.
Mm-hmm.
On the X axis, and the Y axis is market driven and not market driven. And if you go authoritarian and not market driven, that's a state communism.
Yeah.
And if you go in authoritarian and market driven, that's China.
Yeah.
And if you go the other way, if you go politically free and market driven, that's Nordic countries.
Yeah. China is such an enigma right now that even the economists don't know. They don't have a moniker to hang on China.
Yeah.
Because their government, the way I see it, is that governmentally they're still communist, but economically they're swinging more and more capitalist.
Well, they're authoritarian communist leadership with free market, semi free market.
Yeah, yeah. And that shouldn't be.
It's very complicated. Yeah, we'll do get a China expert on here sometime. He can help us with it. But
okay, well, next time I think we just didn't have enough time to get to it today because of all the events that have evolved over.
We can chat about it. We got a little more time if you want to put something in there. We don't have to stop yet.
Getting back to socialism. Now, one of the hallmarks of socialism, profits are distributed depending on the results of every individual's work. Now, I kind of disagree with that.
Wait, say that again?
It says, profits are distributed depending on the results of every individual's work.
That's in socialism?
Socialism.
What type of socialism does it say?
It's just
things you read... You have to qualify
because
again, there are 15 different types of socialism.
Oh my God.
And so in some of those versions, that might be the case. And in some not. And I would say the majority of them, it's not.
Yeah, because, well, let's face it, folks. Look at sometimes the insane profits that corporations make. Now, do the workers share in that profit? Do they get
some of them do.
Yeah, some of them do. Yeah.
It's all depending on the company's philosophy and their setup.
But they're not rewarded with extra pay because of the profits that they help produce. So that's where, and again, this is just kind of a general.
Unless you get stock options.
Well, there you go.
You know, America has a million different ways of, you know, they're all private company, private or public, you know, once they become public, but a lot of different ways of rewarding employees. I lived in Silicon Valley, and it's a lot of startups out there. They barely get any pay, mm-hmm. but it's all based on, how the company does. Mm-hmm. Like you get stock options or, that's how you become a 10, 20 millionaire. Because if you bust your butt, you might not get a salary for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
But if you bust your butt and the company does well, you make $20 million.
Yeah, but you get in profit sharing and stock options and all that. Yeah, for sure.
And I don't know. That's capitalism right there. But I also think that that's a little bit out of whack in some ways. Because then I live there and I'm like, I can't afford a $3 million house. But that's just me.
Yeah.
So I moved to Carmel.
Okay, another another point on socialism, and see, this is where, and this one really, really hits home with me, because it really shows that socialism and democracy can exist separately, okay? That socialism does not kill democracy, and here it is. It says, there is a central government that owns all of the means of production, decides on the distribution of goods, and makes plans for the economy. That's not the way it works here.
Well, that's also like, I think what you're reading is like a combination of several socialist
programs. Yes,
yeah. I mean, that could be...
This is kind of a blanket
statement.
Right.
And so if you're really talking about a socialism or a socialist version of something that might occur here, I don't think that's going to happen. We're not going to have like fully state run anything here. We're too free. We're too.
Key word being free.
Yeah,
democracy.
We're just too free. The democracy. Democracy is a political system, right? Is it a political system?
It is.
Political system, and socialism and capitalism are economic systems. So, it sort of ties in, and that's why I think like. What I was saying before is capitalism has sort of overrun democracy. Capitalism has kind of become democracy. You know what I mean? In a weird mm-hmm. way. Then how I view it is like there is no, democracy sort of taken a second fiddle seat to capitalism. And that's kind of what I meant to say before, is that our economic system has overridden our political system.
I hear you. But the other thing is too, I mean, if you go by this statement, and again, this is just a gem, because we could spend a lifetime discussing different types of socialism and all that stuff. But one thing it says, the government owns all the means of production. That means that by this definition, that the government would have to nationalize every business.
And that is like state communism.
Bingo. It's getting real clear. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is where
there are no private businesses at all.
No. The government would be in control of all the businesses.
Yeah. That's what the Soviet Union was.
Yeah, and they would decide on distribution of the goods. That doesn't happen here. That's done by private businesses. In fact,
and that'll never happen. That we're so far away from that. Again, it just kind of goes back to this whole thing of this fear that they keep throwing out, these politicians and different people throwing out this fear that that's just going to happen. It's never going to happen here. We will never do that. I don't think anybody wants that. I don't even think AOC. You know AOC?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think she even wants that. She might. Who knows? No. But I don't think she's a pretty rational person, and for the most part, she has some pretty strongly left ideas, and I'm not in agreement with all of them, but no. I do you know, appreciate her passion. She seems to care a lot about her particular jurisdiction where she is, you know, from Brooklyn, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what she's about. So fair enough. I'm not the same as her, but, you know, it's complicated. I don't know. I think it is. We've been 2 hours, I think, close to 2 hours.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I'm going to wrap it up. I think you probably have a few more points, but,
yeah, I want to finish our discussion with socialism. Then I want to talk about communism, then compare the two. And we had also planned on speaking somewhat about globalization, which frankly, folks, I'm a babe in the woods on. I wish if somebody's listening that, you know, an economist or somebody well-versed in different economic systems would contact us, because I really feel...
Well, it's a big point. It's one of the top points that Scott pointed out the other day. It's one of the top points that a lot of people. It's one of the biggest differences between right now the Trump view and the Democrats.
Yeah,
is globalization versus nationalism, or, you know, isolationism, or whatever you want to call it. And that is the biggest, one of the biggest differences. And then socialism kind of goes into that too. Those are probably the two biggest things I think that people tout as being a Trumper.
Yes.
So, you know, anti-socialist and anti-globalist.
And neo-fascist.
Well, that's...
Oh, did I say that? Well. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. Tom, how dare you?
I got to watch that shit. Yeah.
Well, we're going to throw out a free... shout out to a brewery in Indiana that we like. It's called Taxman Brewery. If you're listening, feel free to sponsor us. We just gave you a free endorsement there.
They've got a great brewery, and they've got good food, and it is in Bartersville, Indiana, which consists of a grain this is Indiana, folks, so a grain elevator, and I think maybe a post office, and they might even have a train stop there. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Any people? Or just beer?
You know what's funny, John? When I was there, the only people I ever saw were the ones in the brewery.
So maybe
they all hang out at the brewery.
All right. Well, it's good beer. They make a lot of strong beers and cool cans. A lot of Belgian inspired beers. So
IPAs.
If you like beer, if you like beers, give them a try.
All right.
Taxman, you owe us big time.
Sponsorship.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Until next time.